There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Into the third and final hour of the show. Big thanks to all the team from the ICC Academy for joining us in the second hour of the show. This final hour, we will, of course, be building up to our live kickoff, which is Chelsea against Bournemouth from 6 o'clock this evening. There is a game ongoing at the moment. Into the final 10, Leicester-Liverpool. Chris McCarty.
Indeed, Leicester 1, Liverpool 2. Liverpool looked to be in sound control of this match. Goals in that first half from Sadio Mane, Roberto Firmino as well, heading home on the stroke of half-time. But an awful mistake, if you are just joining us, from Alisson Becker. £62 million plus Liverpool spent on the Brazilian number 1. And, well, for that price, you'd at least think he could perform a Cruyff turn. He was having none of it. He was chased down by Iheanacho. It was he that robbed the goalkeeper of the ball. He squared it, and it was Gazelle who ended up putting the ball into the net for Leicester. That has breathed new life into their challenge. They've got 8 minutes to try and salvage something from this, but it does remain Leicester 1, Liverpool 2.
England in a spot of bother in the cricket, 105 for 4. That is because two quick wickets fell for England. India picking up Keaton Jennings with the ball before lunch, and Johnny Bairstow the ball after lunch as well. So England have been reduced to 105 for the loss of 4 wickets. That gives them a lead of 78 runs with 6 wickets remaining. In under an hour's time, we will of course be heading off to our live game, which I believe 5 games kicking off at 6 o'clock local time here in the UAE. Chelsea-Bournemouth
is
going to be our main.
It is. That is our featured match, Chelsea-Bournemouth. That will then be followed up a little later, Manchester City against Newcastle. All of those matches, of course, brought to you by our partners TalkSport. And I'm delighted to say, for the first time this season, we've been keeping up to date with one another on social media, but Adam Bridge is back. He's been missing in action over the past few weeks at the start of this new Premier League season. He joins us now. He is a West Ham fan as well. We'll get to that in a second. But a very good afternoon to you, Adam.
You just had to throw that in, didn't you? You couldn't just leave it. You had to start with that.
We will.
That's why I've been missing in action, to be fair.
I was going to say,
I've been throwing my head in the
sand.
That's why.
I thought that would be the case. We'll get to West Ham in just a second, Adam. But listen, it is great to have you back on the airwaves of Dubai 103.8. And before we get and discuss Chelsea-Bournemouth, it is our featured match. Could I just get your thoughts on the season thus far, Adam? What have you taken away from it? Who have you been impressed with? I know who you've not been impressed with, and I'm sure West Ham and Man United might get a mention. But give us your overall assessment of the season thus far.
Look, I've been surprised. I mean, we'll come on to Chelsea in a moment. I've been surprised at how well Chelsea have started, if I'm honest. I did think Sarri would take a little bit of time to settle in to English football, but I think he's gone about it the right way. I think one of the things that stood out for me, and I mean, I've kind of got an eye on the Liverpool game right now, it's kind of almost as expected. I think we thought that City would be as dominant as they were. I was not in the slightest bit surprised that Wolves gave them a tough game last weekend, because they're a very well organised, well structured team that play with no fear, and it's those kind of teams that tend to cause City the kind of main kind of issues. I have been a little bit surprised at some of the teams lurking near the foot of the table. I think Javi Gracia has got to be the manager of the month for August, just for the wonderful work he's done at Watford. And I know some people are saying, oh well, hang on, Liverpool didn't concede a goal and they won their 3 games, but I think Watford have been very impressive. But it looks to me it's going to bubble up into what's going to be a fascinating season, and it's probably not going to be that 2-horse race that everyone was expecting. I think, you know, Spurs and Chelsea may well hang around in this battle for quite some time. When it comes to Manchester United, I was really encouraged by the opening 45 minutes on Monday night against Spurs. I thought it was the best, the most pace, the most attacking I'd seen Manchester United for a while. The fact it all fell apart after half time was the worry. But you know, I don't think he's far off there. I don't believe he's far off. I don't think he will be sacked. I think they will give him the time that he needs, and it could get better for United. And I'm just saying that for you, Chris, just to soothe you.
Thanks for that. Yeah, I'm kind of on the opposite spectrum. I think that he is a dead man walking, Jose Mourinho. I really do. I just think there's too much ill feeling at that football club. And what I'm hearing, the noise is coming out, he's not a popular man. The players don't necessarily like him. A lot of coaches, I'm hearing, don't like him either. But coming back to Liverpool, if we can, Adam, because 4 wins from 4, it could well be. And I'm maybe talking a little too early here. There is still 5 minutes remaining at the King Power Stadium. 25 points was the gap between Liverpool and Manchester City last season. Of course, course, it's a new start, and it is always important, a brand new season. Of course, both teams start from zero. From what you've seen, though, are Liverpool, are they genuine title challengers, do you feel?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. I think defensively they are much better. We talked a few times last year, and you know, I've always felt that Gomez is going to be the ideal partner for Virgil van Dijk. I think he adds that quality. I think he'll learn from van Dijk. And I think when it comes to being a decent centre-half, he's probably got a little bit more about him at times and less mistakes in him than you find from the likes of Lovren or Matip. I think Keita's just a wonderful addition and has slotted into that team perfectly. And what they've got now also is they've got the cover and they've got the strength in depth. And I think that occasionally was what was missing last time. So I think that addition of van Dijk, a keeper they've got confidence in, you know, yes, a little error today, but nothing that we haven't seen before from a Liverpool goalkeeper. And I don't think it's going to be a major issue for him. His handling is good. His coming for crosses is good. Generally, his decision-making has been really good. So on that basis alone, and the strength that they have now, I think they're absolutely title contenders.
Yeah, let's talk about a team that will be featured in our featured match. It is Chelsea against Bournemouth. You yourself, Adam, have said that they've surprised you as Maurizio Sarri's Blues. They have looked good. I saw them on the opening weekend against Huddersfield. They blew Huddersfield away, in all honesty. What has impressed you most about them and Maurizio Sarri as well? I mean, Jorginho, the signing of him. You can easily see why Pep Guardiola wanted him at City, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, he's like a Rolls-Royce sat in the centre of that midfield. And when you... What I like the way Sarri's gone about this is he's not rushed. He's taken his time. Yeah. He's waited until Hazard is in prime condition. He's not rushed Kovacic into that midfield, despite the fact that we all know from having watched him previously, he likes to play with three central midfielders to do his work. What he's asking N'Golo Conte to do is a different job, and Conte is delivering on that. I, too, watched the game against Huddersfield, and they did blow them away, and I thought that was a really a wonderful opportunity for Huddersfield to kind of make a mark and to have a little bit of a go at a Chelsea side that would be a little bit undercooked and a little bit not quite ready. But Chelsea was superb, particularly in the second half. They controlled the tempo of the game. He hasn't gone out and splashed lots of money, but actually the signings he's made and the way he's got them playing as a back four, the way he's got David Luiz playing is quite a surprise. And I think everyone also thought that Alonso would be kind of almost a shadow of his former self, playing as a proper fullback as opposed to a wingback. But he's just as strong and looks just as offensive because he's got that extra shield of cover from those three central midfielders.
And a quick word as well on Bournemouth. They've made a very, very good start to the new campaign as well. And the thing that's impressed me most, Adam, about Eddie Howe, huge fan of him, what he's done, what he did in his first spell, then going back there, taking them into the Premier League. He spent big this summer. I look at Diego Rico, I look at Jefferson Lerma, I think that was 25 million plus. He's not rushed them in, he's largely stuck with the team that has seen him, well, that have done so well in the past season or two. You've got to give him credit for that, right?
He has, until today, because they both start today in a change of shape as well. So he's worked a way to get him into the starting 11 today. I talked about it. I was at the London Stadium a couple of weeks ago, and the one thing that stood out that day, not only about the pitiful second half performance from West Ham, but you know they had seven new signings among the 14 players they used that day, and yet, as you quite rightly point out, Eddie Howe had brought Brooks into the side, who knows English football very well, and actually performed particularly well that day. But he'd waited on Lerma and he'd waited on Rico because he had the luxury of being able to do that, and I think that's one of the things that's been a bit of a point for me about some of the teams that have spent big. Those that spent big and rushed players into the team have found it quite challenging to blend and get themselves going at the start of this campaign. Those that have had the luxury of being able to take their time and allow these big, new, expensive signings to settle and to get in and around the group and in and around the squad have actually benefited from that. And Bournemouth is one of those. They are solid, they're dependable, he trusts the players he's got, the players clearly trust him, and they find a way to play. And I think that's part of the reason why we're seeing him go with three at the back today, because he feels that's his best way, as he's done it previously, to try and nullify this Chelsea side.
Yeah, let's get some team news from this one. It is Chelsea-Bournemouth. It gets underway in about 45 minutes time. It is a match you can hear live and exclusive on Dubai 103.8. Put us in the picture then, Adam. Who starts where?
Well, it's one change for Chelsea today. Willian is in for Pedro. So obviously Kepa's in goal, and it's the usual back four of Azpilicueta, Luis, Rudiger and Alonso, Conte, Jorginho and Kovacic in the middle, with Willian, Morata and Hazard up top. The three changes for Bournemouth see Sermon, Daniels and Brooks drop out. So Lerma and Rico not only get their first starts, but they're Premier League vows today as well, as coming into the starting 11, as has Francis too. So he's going with a back three. So Begovic is in goal, and it's Francis, Ake and Cook. The two wing-backs are Smith and Rico. Then Lerma is alongside Gosling, with King, Wilson and Fraser up front. And I think out of everybody, Fraser's been possibly the most impressive player they've had so far this campaign.
Finally, I read an article this past week as well. He's ditched pasta and pizzas after the 90 minutes on a Saturday evening. So that, in part, has got, I guess, constituted some upturn in form. Very quickly, Adam, before we let you go, well, two things. Give me a prediction for this one. Chelsea victory?
Yeah, I think they probably will win today. They'll concede, but they'll score a couple at the very least.
Okay, so a Chelsea victory. And before we let you go, let's get to the elephant in the room, West Ham United. Is it another long, hard season for you boys?
I think today will tell us a lot, actually, Chris, if we're going to be honest with you. I think today's the kind of game, if it's not going to be a long, hard season, we need to stamp our authority on and we need to come up with a victory. I think he's trying at the moment to leave the likes of Snodgrass and Antonio in the team so he's not having to blood as many new faces. But actually, for me, Snodgrass and Antonio aren't up to scratch. Yarmolenko does, though, look a little bit off the pace. The one bright, shining star for me so far has been Felipe Anderson, who now he's moved into that number 10 role. Looks excellent, but he's brought Balbuena in at the back, and anyone who saw that attempted tackle against Callum Wilson 2 weeks ago will know that that will unnerve any West Ham fan. I'm sure, in fact, Tom is having a meltdown about it right now.
I'm sure he will be as well. We watched this space, West Ham against Wolves, that one getting underway at 6 o'clock. Always a pleasure, Adam, great to have you back. Enjoy Chelsea Bournemouth. We are looking forward to your commentary. Who's with you alongside you this afternoon?
Adrian Clark, former Arsenal manager, alongside me today.
Okay, brilliant, Adam. Looking forward to it. Adam Bridge, always a pleasure. Look forward to hearing you and enjoy the game, my friend.
Cheers, guys. Good to see you.
That is the voice of Adam Bridge there. Chelsea against Bournemouth. That is our featured match. 40 minutes and counting until kickoff at Stamford Bridge. When we come back, we'll have a full time from the King Power Stadium. Stay tuned.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
Right we are. Let's put you in the picture of what's happening in the world of sport. Let us tell you that the club rugby is back over in the United Kingdom. It is no longer the Aviva Premiership. It is the Gallagher Premiership now. We had the game last night, West Country Derby last night, seeing Bristol, the new boys, newly promoted up into the league. They beat their rivals Bath yesterday afternoon, so Bristol with an opening a day victory, and the action has just got underway on day two of the brand new season with Gloucester, who have been in the headlines thanks to a certain Danny Cipriani's misdemeanours over the last couple of weeks. They're taking on Northampton with Dylan Hartley and the rest of the team there. Gloucester off to a flying start with a try in the first couple of minutes from James Hansen. That one's been levelled up by Piers Francis for Northampton. It's currently Gloucester 11, Northampton 8 after 16 minutes of play. Let's get to the football.
Yeah, full time at the King Power Stadium, Tom. Just moments ago, the full time whistle blew. It's finished. Leicester 1, Liverpool 2. We're just seeing the top of the table. Liverpool atop that said table. 4 wins from 4. It was good today. Certainly in the opening 45 minutes, Liverpool dominant in this one. They dominated possession. An early goal through Sadio Mane settled any nerves they may have had. Leicester, as I said earlier, have proved themselves to be a very good team this the start of this campaign. Yes, they lost to Manchester United. They backed that up with 3 victories, 2 in the league, 1 in the AFL Cup. They fell behind doubly so. Roberto Firmino heading home on the stroke of half time, and then in that second half it was an error, an awful error that you will hear and read and see, I'm sure, an awful lot. Alisson Becker it was who just made an absolute rick of a back pass. He tried to be too cute, he was caught in possession, Iheanacho squared it, and it was Rashid Gazelle who was handed a start by Claude Puel up front for Leicester this afternoon. But they huffed and puffed. They had opportunities, 1 or 2 half chances did Leicester in those closing stages. It came from nothing, and Liverpool, a tough place to go is the King Power Stadium, and Liverpool have come away with it with 3 points, 12 from 12. Liverpool top of the league. It's finished Leicester 1, Liverpool 2.
England lead India by 80 runs. They have 6 wickets remaining in their second innings. They're 107 for 4. Johnny Bairstow is being criticised roundly on social media at the moment for his shot selection, first ball after the lunch break, which saw him bowled by Shamley. So we'll keep an eye on that one for you. Ross Crist, over to you.
Gentlemen, as we know, basketball is growing out here in Dubai and in the region, certainly in terms of fan base and playing out here. And one big reason to that is Mr. Mason Plumlee, who's came back to the desert this year. He teamed up with Duplace, and he put on his Mason Plumlee basketball camp. Now, this is a guy who's walked the walk and talked the talk in terms of basketball. He's a former NCAA champion with the Duke Blue Devils. He's won a gold medal 2014 in the World Cup, representing the United States of America. He was on the NBA All-Rookie First Team. He's played for the Brooklyn Nets, the Portland Trailblazers, and now he starts for the Denver Nuggets at the Mile High City. I got to catch up with him yesterday at his camp. Very special guest now joining us on Dubai Eye 103.8. Former NCAA champion, Duke basketball, Mr. USA basketball. He played for the Brooklyn Nets, he played for the Portland Trailblazers, and he currently plays center for the Denver Nuggets, Mr. Mason Plumlee. Mason, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Now, Mason, we're going to get to your basketball career. Everything I just said, I'm going to pick your brain about getting to play in the NBA. But you're out here for a very special reason right now. I believe you're putting on a camp. This is your second time out here. Tell us what brings you back to Dubai.
The first year we did it, we really didn't know what to expect. We saw some energy and some excitement for basketball when I toured with my university back in 2012, and I always wanted to come back. So we did the first camp last year. The turnout was great, the feedback was great, so we came out for year two, and so far it's been even better than last.
What do you like most about putting on a camp?
Just, it gives me time to remember going to camp as a kid. I was fortunate to go to some really good basketball camps as a kid. Sometimes you play good, sometimes you play bad, sometimes you're up with a different division, sometimes you're the best player, but just the camp experience and not knowing what's going to be there until you get there, and that feeling is fun for me to experience from the other side. So that's what I think about.
Dubai isn't really known as a big basketball town. It's certainly growing out here with the expat population. Have you noticed any talent, anything to build on out here?
Yeah, I would say, the grassroots level, just in the short time I've been here has improved dramatically. And also we just played, our camp counselors played against one of the groups here, one of the more senior teams, and they're much improved from when we came and played the national team in college. So, I think it's growing, and I think, the more kids play at the park, the more kids play together instead of just by themselves, the game will grow naturally.
You mentioned that you participated in camps when you were younger. Is there a particular maybe NBA players camp that you went to when you were a young little basketball player?
I never went to an NBA players camp, but I went to some university camps. I went to my high school camp, and it was a lot of fun to do those things.
Awesome. You've got to play many years now in the NBA. I'd call you, I guess, a veteran at this point. You're on your third team. How are you finding out in Denver?
I'm enjoying it. Each team has been a special experience, and I'm grateful to be in Denver now, and I'm looking forward to my third season there.
What are the expectations going into this NBA season?
We're talented on paper. We have a really good roster. I like the way our team's put together. But expectations are internal. A lot of people are going to talk about different things because of who we have on our team. But as long as we stay healthy, we feel like we can compete with anybody.
Competing with anybody, you play the five position, which is the center. For those of you listening at home, Mason is extremely tall. He drank his milk growing up. Who's the number one person you see and you're like, gosh, I do not want to go against him tonight? Who is that one guy in the NBA who maybe plays your position and you're just like, man, please not tonight?
I mean, I think that's why I'm in the NBA, because I'm not afraid of anybody. That's just the mentality of any player there. You can't, if anybody's not looking forward to a matchup, then they won't be in the league very long.
Also in the league, you have two brothers. I mean, that is simply remarkable. Growing up, were your parents just pounding basketball down your guys' throats, or was it kind of you guys took the lead on this?
No, they didn't care so much. Both my parents played in college, but they just let us do what we wanted to, and then they were there to help out if we asked for instructions. So nothing was forced on us. It was just natural.
Is it weird playing against your brothers, or do you look forward to that type of competition?
It's not weird. We played against each other growing up, and we played college together. So I played against them a few times, and I enjoy it.
You've got to play for Team USA. You got to be on the Duke National Championship team. You got to play for three different NBA teams. And you got to play against your brothers in the NBA. What would you call your biggest accomplishment thus far in your sporting career?
Biggest accomplishment? You know, anytime you're part of the last team standing, it's a special feeling. So in high school, I was on some state championship teams. You mentioned college, we won a championship. And then the World Cup or, you know, whatever, FIBA. The FIBA games, yeah. Was super fun too. So just that feeling of finishing on top, I would say, is the most special accomplishment.
One of the most decorated coaches of all time in the college game is Coach K. You got to play for him. He's recently retired from Team USA. He was the men's coach there, and I believe you got to play for him as well. What type of person is he? Because we know what type of coach he is. Yeah. He wins and he wins and he wins, but what is he like off the court?
He's, you know, down to earth, you know, funny guy. People don't know he has a good sense of humor. So, you know, he's a fun person to be around off the court.
And he left the program with San Antonio head coach Greg Popovich, who will now head Team USA. Team USA in good hands with Pop?
I think so. You know, he has a really good way of bringing guys together and bringing talent together. So I'm excited to see what he does with that program.
Elsewhere across the NBA, we've been hearing this word super team, and I'm sure you're probably sick of getting asked this question, because I would be sick of getting asked it if I played. But you look at what the Warriors have done, and they've put together quite a roster of all-star caliber talent. You look what happened a couple years ago in Miami, and you look what Cleveland did at the beginning of last season. What's your stance on the super team? Are you pro super team, against it, or are you kind of up in the air about it?
You know, I just think that's a media label.
Okay.
You know, I think any team you're on, if you're on a really good team, the guys become stars. You know, I think if you take some of the, you know, with the exception of like Kevin Durant or Stephen Curry, you take, you know, the rest of the guys on the Golden State Warriors, you put them on other teams, they might not have the same star power that they do on a championship team. So, you know, I think stars with the, look, there are a couple guys in the league, LeBron, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, where you could put them on any team and they're going to be exceptional. But even, you know, their level of stardom has gone to another level by being part of a really good team and a championship team.
When you came into the league, was there one player that you said, oh my goodness, I can't believe I get to play against this guy? Like maybe an idol you had or something like that growing up?
You know, I just think you watch everybody before you get to the league, but probably the most impressive player to me has been Kevin Durant. Watching, he makes the game look so easy when you watch on TV, but until you play him in person, you don't really appreciate how good he really is.
You see, we read about a lot of NBA players, NFL players, even Major League Baseball players that get into the league. They make all of this money, okay? Then they retire or they're out of the league, and they don't know what to do next in their career.
Right.
I'm not saying you're close to the end of your career because you have plenty more years left in you. What do you think's next for you after basketball?
I'm not really sure. You know, I have a lot of interest off the court, but nothing that I'm, you know, surefire just going to spend my time on afterwards. I'm just enjoying each moment. You know, each season is a blessing, and, you know, understanding that you don't get to play forever. So I'm going to take advantage of it while I have it and then go from there.
Well, I love watching you play, and I like that you keep coming back to Dubai. You teamed up with Duplays, if I'm correct,
yep.
And they've been helping you put on this camp and last year's camp?
Yeah, and Duplays has done a great job. You know, they've given us everything we need on the ground. They've gotten the word out, and our camp this year was a big success.
So this is your second year for the camp. We expect to see you back here in Dubai for a third year, teaming up with Duplays, or seeing you back in the desert?
Yeah, I see us coming back for year three.
Mason Plumlee, Denver Nuggets starting center. He's out here with Duplays putting on his second annual basketball camp. Been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
Yeah, game on indeed. We're building up to Chelsea against Bournemouth. That's going to be a live game right here on Dubai. I won a 3.8 from 6 o'clock this evening, and then Newcastle Man City straight after that. However, from 6 o'clock this evening, you'll also be able to get all the latest scores as they happen from the other 6 o'clock kickoff, 6 o'clock being local time here in the UAE. Brighton taking on Fulham, Crystal Palace against Southampton, Everton take on Huddersfield, and West Ham, the much maligned West Ham, taking on the other W of Wolves a little later on. So as the goals go in, we will of course let you know about that. And then tomorrow on Sports Tonight, fascinating game.
It is, yes, 7 p.m. local time here. It is Burnley against Manchester United. An awful lot of eyeballs will be trained on Turf Moor because, of course, Jose Mourinho is a man under an awful lot of pressure. We will hear from Jose in the next few moments, but one man who I know will be keeping a very close eye on proceedings at Turf Moor and who's been keeping a very close eye on what has been going on over at Old Trafford. Delighted to be joined now by journalist, Manchester United fan, author as well, England. The quest for glory, it goes on, and I will say that as a Scotsman, delighted to be joined live on the line by Tom McDermott. A very good afternoon to you, Tom.
Good afternoon, Chris.
It is great to have you on the Dubai Eye 103.8 airwaves this afternoon, Tom. You are, and we will get to that book, incidentally, because I know you have been pushing that, and given the fact that England had such a wonderful World Cup, we'll get to that in just a second. But Manchester United, it is a club that is very close to your heart, Tom. I know that you are someone that keeps a very close eye. You've got good contacts in the game, close to that football club. What have you made of what has gone on, not just this season, but all the way, I guess, Tom, all the way back to day one of pre-season? Jose Mourinho has been negative, negative, negative. It's come to the point now where failure to beat Burnley tomorrow, is he out of a job?
straight in, 2 feet. I think if he is the greatest manager in the world, I think it's about time we actually see him performing like that on the pitch. I think that you're right there to go back. I think the issue is some people put issues that go as far back as the Sevilla Champions League game earlier last season. But certainly since the players reported back to pre-season, there's been a different feel about the place. I think he's been moaning about what players he had available, what players he didn't get in the transfer market, and it seems to have rolled on into the season. The worst signs, even during 2-1 victory over Leicester on the opening weekend, that things weren't quite right. Leicester, I thought, played quite well, and then obviously since then there's been a collapse, and I think he's now starting to knuckle down, focus on what you've got, what players he's got available, and let his coaching do the talking, because as we know, the transfer window is not going to help him. It's still open now for the 1st of January. So yes, all is not well, but it's now time to focus on what's going on the pitch and to really start, you know, getting 3 points for United going to this international break. And like you said, just all Gary Neville said, shut a few people up, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You are a man that is at Old Trafford an awful lot. What is the general consensus among Manchester United fans, the fans that pay their hard-earned money to rock up to the Theatre of Dreams? Is the majority of fans, are they still behind Jose Mourinho?
I think so. I think they've seen what's gone on since Sir Alex Ferguson left. What will happen if Jose Mourinho left? Yes, we've seen this before, this kind of behaviour, this sort of third season syndrome previously in his career, but what would changing a manager do now? I was very much in the Mourinho in camp, but at the same time, I think you've got to be careful, because if he continues to do this, you just wonder how long Ed Wood would have let it go on for. But I think that United fans have seen what chopping and changing a manager does. Don't forget, this is a guy that in his first season he did win 2 trophies. He was second behind a very good Manchester City last year. I think he needs to improve his mood, and I think in performances and results need to improve. I think when that does happen, I don't think that United fans and the supporters, their mood will change. But at the moment, it's all about tomorrow. It's all about getting 3 points at Burnley. Because if he doesn't, then, you know, crisis is a word that's been used very often the last few weeks. But if he doesn't get the 3 points tomorrow, I think that United are looking at crisis. And I doubt that he'll last beyond Christmas.
Yeah, you talk about his mood. I always think football teams on the park, they always resemble the manager, right? They're like mirror images. You look at Liverpool,
absolutely,
there's a vibrancy about them. Tottenham the other night. Manchester United, the word I used, and I was at Old Trafford for the opening game, as I know you were, Tom, against Leicester. It's all a little joyless. It's all a little bit listless. There doesn't, to me, in the biggest indictment, there's a couple indictments I can level against Jose Mourinho. One of the biggest, though, is I don't see what is going on in the training field Monday to Friday. We're so preoccupied with what the opposition are doing. There's no patterns of play. There are no relationships built up, whether that's with Sanchez, Lukaku. It all looks a bit individualistic for my liking. Is that what you see? And if that's the case, how on earth does he go about remedying that?
Yeah, that's right. I think that applies to any kind of business or any job you've got. If the move from the top is not positive, of course you're going to have bad days. You're going to have days when you're not going to get what you want. But I think if the move from the top isn't positive, and it'll start to wear off on the staff, and in this case, the players, I think it's time to look at people, you know, look within what's going on. Can we get the best out of what we got? All the players are back now, the window's shut, so that can't help him. You know, there's a job to do against Burnley, who, let's be honest, United should be beating Burnley tomorrow. They've just come off the back of a Europa League game as well. United have had the best part of a week to prepare, so it's time really now to focus on what he's got, not what he hasn't got, and go and get those 3 points tomorrow. But you're absolutely right, the partnerships aren't there across the pitch. You look at the United team, or any great Mourinho team of previous years, but it's particularly United. You look at Vidic and Ferdinand, Ronnie Johnson and Yap Stam at the back. In midfield, they had Keane and Scholes. And then up front, you had people like Dwight York, Andy Cole, and if that didn't work, they put Solskjaer and Sheringham in. United haven't got that at the moment. They haven't got that they've got a back four that's largely made up of players in Ashley Young and Antonio Valencia, who were playing as wings under Sir Alex Ferguson. The central of defence is, he's ripping it to pieces. He's already said that he doesn't know what his best back four is. So right at the back, he's got a problem that he needs to solve quick, and he almost needs to think, right, these guys are going to make mistakes, but I need to just go with it. And then into midfield, if Matic doesn't play or he's injured, he seems to struggle to get the combination right. And of course, Paul Pogba, we could spend a whole show talking about him and how he's performing inconsistently. And then you go further up the pitch where you expect a Manchester United team to attack with width and pace, and you look at Alexis Sanchez, he's not quite delivered. Martial and Rashford, are they going backwards? And then Lukaku always seems like it takes 5 or 6 games to get into the swing of things. So you're absolutely right, the partnerships aren't working, and then that raises other questions. What's going on the training field? What are they doing at Carrington? Are they working on these? Are the players? Andres Pereira is another, started pre-season. He was one of the bright lights of pre-season, but yeah, he just seems to have a poor game against Brighton, which so many have, let's be honest, yet he's not there, he's not playing. So absolutely, you know, nail on the head really. Let's see what he's all about. Is he the greatest manager in the world? Can he make, you know, some of these partnerships? Can he get players playing together? And more importantly, can he make them and get 3 points to go into this all-important international break with? On the point of the managerial things, if you're a United supporter, all you see is, you know, it pains us to say it, Man City, Liverpool, these guys, their managers, you know, playing in an attacking way, cheerful manager, even Pochettino without any trophies. But what United are seeing a manager who's happy, who's going onto the pitch after the game, embracing his players, and he's encouraging them to express themselves in the final third, which doesn't seem to be the case at United at the moment.
Tom, I have the different mindset of my co-host here, Chris McCarty. I think Jose Mourinho is somewhat warranted in his gripes with the team management. You look at what happened with the signings. We knew the World Cup was there. It's been on the calendar for years. United waits to make Absolutely. All their signings till after the United waits to make all their signings till after the World Cup. You mentioned Liverpool before that. They went out. They got some big names before the World Cup. Do you think he's just in complaining about how they kind of went through this off-season signing period?
I think so. I think that's definitely a problem, isn't it? As we mentioned before, though, he's not happy with his back four. I think he was asked after the defeat against Tottenham, do you know your best back four? The answer to that is no. But you're right. He knew about the World Cup. He knew in January, after the Sanchez deal was completed, that this was a critical window, or the window that's just shut was a critical window for him. So surely by then, you know, you look at other teams, and people always use the World Cup as an excuse, but it didn't seem to prevent Liverpool getting a bit of business. And I know Fabinho wasn't at the World Cup, but they seemed to have a plan, and it was executed. Whereas United, it looks like whatever's going on between Woodward and Mourinho has provided a list to Woodward of preferred targets, but because of the sort of discontent between the two, they've not been delivered, and that's what set Mourinho back. So he's come into pre-season expecting or hoping for at least 3 or 4 of his targets, and they've not arrived. That said, over the last sort of 2-3 years since he's been here, he has signed 11 players, he has signed a complete new team, he has spent over £400 million. So as a business, and taking the supporters' hat off here, I can kind of see why Woodward and the owners might say, well, hang on a second, we've given you £400 million, what are we getting back for it? What's coming, as Chris said, what's coming from the training ground? And I think that's part of the issue, and I think that's where the clash is.
Absolutely, totally in agreement with that, Tom. They have given him money. Henrik Mkhitaryan, not enough is made of that for my money, that he was a big money signing that failed. Jose Mourinho failed for whatever reason, and of course Henrik Mkhitaryan needs to take an awful lot of responsibility for that. He was jettisoned rather quickly, so you can understand why Ed Woodward might be a little reticent. That will be my final point on this, Tom, because I've got to ask as well, we're hearing an awful lot said about the commercial side of Manchester United. There is no club in world football that get it quite right
like Manchester United in that standpoint. Where United have been falling short, I believe, is on the footballing side. Who's doing the recruitment? Director of football, sporting director, have been mentioned. Some suggestion, Tom, and I'd be keen to get your thoughts, what you're hearing on this, that United, that Ed Woodward, that there's an acceptance at the football club that they do need, perhaps, a director of football. I've heard Edwin van der Sar, who's got a similar role over at Ajax, been mentioned. Monchi, who's been linked with Manchester United, the Spaniard, for numerous years now. He's over at AS Roma doing a similar job. Is that something that you can see in the not-too-distant future, Manchester United going down the sporting director route?
I think so. I think, yeah, again, Chris, it's spot on, because I think that United have fallen behind in other things. Sir Alex Ferguson and David Gill had a relationship where they would together recruit the players or pinpoint targets and go and execute that. I think Ed Woodward, with Moyes, Van Gaal and Mourinho, has tried to sort of continue that relationship, if you like, and it hasn't happened. And what happens every time a new manager comes in is, of course, they want £200 or £300 billion to spend. There's no structure. What I'd be amazed if it didn't happen is between now and, I'd say, sort of February time, a new sporting director or director of football isn't introduced, where a philosophy, a way of playing will have been agreed. So if somebody like Mourinho goes to the sporting director of football, whatever it is, and says, look, I want this and this to come in the next transfer window, there are rules and there are guidelines that you must stick to. So the players must be, you know, under the age of 28, must have a certain physique, must have a certain way of playing, because I think that's key. United are moving away from a style of play. We've mentioned the partnerships. How do United play? Where is the attacking width? So I think a sporting director, whoever that is, will come in, will agree on a way of playing, and whoever the manager is will then come in and say, look, I want these four players. You can have three of them, but the fourth one must fit with this philosophy, must fit within this age group, just so you're not in a position where you're not buying three or four 30-year-olds. The manager then gets sacked halfway through the season, and then you're back to stage one, having to rip it up and start again. So yes, it's essential, and I'd be surprised if one doesn't arrive end of this year or early next.
Absolutely, completely in agreement with you, Tom. Final two from me then, and these are, I guess, well, certainly one of them's the toughest. I'll start with the game tomorrow. Do United beat Burnley at Turf Moor tomorrow evening?
I think they have to, but I think we're probably looking at a draw from a United fans' point of view. I think there's too much. Yeah. There's too much going on. I think that if you're who do you play at the centre of defence? What confidence does, even if he brings Eric Bailly back in? And I think that the way Burnley play, I think they might be carrying a couple of knocks, I believe, Burnley before the game. But I just think if you look at the heart of that United defence, why not go route one? Why not, you know, get the crowd of Manchester United coming to town? I think it'll be a hard game. So I think United to take a point in their relegation six-pointer. But no, in all seriousness, I think it's a draw tomorrow for United.
Okay, draw it is. And the last one from me, Jose Mourinho, is he Manchester United manager at the end of this season?
End of the season, he might be. Will he start the next season as Manchester United manager? Absolutely not.
That's what I thought you'd say. Tom McDermott, always a pleasure catching up with you, my man, as well. And that book, that England, The Quest for Glory, it is still out. You can still purchase it?
Yep, it's just on pre-order at the moment. It's due to drop within the next month or so. So keep out for that. England, The Quest for Glory, just a look back, really, at why England as a national team, other than, I guess, this year in 1990, has failed at tournaments and looked to other sports and their success, English and British sports, and so why can't we have a bit of that in the future? But yeah, out over the next month.
Brilliant. And as a proud Scotsman, Tom, I will be picking that up, because of course it's about their quest for glory and not actually winning.
We're not there yet.
All the way back to now. Not there yet, exactly that, Thomas. Listen, thank you so much, my man. Always a pleasure talking Manchester United with you. It is a very interesting time at Old Trafford. For now, Tom McDermott, have a lovely afternoon, my man, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
Bye-bye.
Great stuff. That is the voice of Tom McDermott there, and as you heard, he does not expect Jose Mourinho to be in charge next season. I've got a funny feeling he will not even see out the year as Manchester United boss. We wait with interest on that. When we come back, final segment of this afternoon's The Grill. We are live from Barasti. Stay tuned.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
That's about it from us down here at The Grill. Why? Because we're going to hand over to all the team at Talk Sport and Bridge. We're going to be giving you commentary of Chelsea against Bournemouth. What can we tell you? Let's tell you what's going on in some of the other sports stories around the world. Q3 underway over at Monza, Italian Grand Prix tomorrow. Hamilton, slender lead in the Drivers' Championship at the moment. Vettel, however, is fastest and has been fastest Q1, Q2. Alonso, Magnussen, Sorotkin, Hülkenberg and Ricciardo, all the drivers to miss out in Q2. So into the final Q3 qualifying in the next few minutes or so. And we understand the rain has just started over there at Monza as well. Grand Prix tomorrow.
If it's raining, Lewis Hamilton to be on pole. You heard it here first, because there is no one quite like him in the rain.
Let us go to some of the other big stories. What are the stories that you're keeping an eye on over the weekend, Mr. Rosquist?
Well, I'm going to be keeping an eye on Nick Kyrgios versus Roger Federer.
Yes.
I think that is going to be just a fantastic matchup in the U.S. Open, because obviously Roger Federer, he's the greatest of all time. But we've been hearing year after year, is Nick Kyrgios, is this talent, is it going to develop? And this could be a coming out match for him. If he can beat Roger Federer in New York City, this would just be huge. This is going to be in Arthur Ashe Stadium. Going to keep my eyes glued to that.
It's been hot, hasn't it?
It's been a little hot. It's kind of crazy that they haven't changed any of the requirements here for the heat. They've kind of just ad-libbed it as they went through here, as us Americans like to do. We just kind of swing through the phases here. But, yeah, it has been a little bit hot in the Big Apple, and a lot of players have had to retire because of the heat. David Ferrer in his last match ever as a professional in a Grand Slam had to leave because of calf cramps.
Exactly.
You felt his pain because you saw it on his face. He wanted to be out there versus Nadal. And it's just, it's a shame that it happens, but it's part of the game.
And you mentioned the heat, Ross, and I do wonder if that will play a part in this match between Nick Kyrgios and Roger Federer. Getting underway 1:30 over there in New York, so it will be for a man of 37 years of age, in the case of Roger Federer, then it could well play a major, major part in this match.
100%. And Nick Kyrgios, he's used to the hot weather. He's from Australia. This really could be a big match. This could be his biggest match of his career.
Yep.
Other than winning an ATP, this could be something very, very big for Kyrgios. And I know I've liked his talent for a long time now. He's been a little bit of a knucklehead on the court. He's certainly fun to watch. It'll be interesting to see if he keeps his antics inside going against one of the greatest. I think he does. I think there's nothing.
He'll be inspired.
I think.
Is that your thought?
I just don't think he's going to be a knucklehead against one of the greatest. I think he respects the game too much. I think he'll an ounce of respect will be in his heart to go against Roger Federer, and you won't see any of this bad mouthing the linesman, anything like that.
That's about it from us. We've got plenty of football to look forward to over the next 24 hours.
We certainly do, yeah. A featured match in about 4 minutes' time. It is Chelsea-Bournemouth. That is then followed by the late kickoff, 8:30 this evening, Manchester City against Newcastle. And then we've got Burnley-Manchester United for you from 7 p.m. tomorrow.
So plenty of football to enjoy. Thanks so much indeed for being part of the broadcast today. Calamity for England. Straight after the drinks break, what it is about breaks and England. Because straight after the drinks break, just when things started to look okay for England, they have had an absolute shocker. Joe Root has been run out by a mile. He was nowhere near the crease. So Root out for 48 as England are looking to build some sort of a total and lead against India. They lead by 95 runs, but the problem is they're 122 for 5. They've lost 5 wickets, 5 wickets remaining. Joe Root, the latest man to go, he was run out for 48. And one more piece of business to bring to you before we hand over to Adam Bridge is that rugby is back. It's the Gallagher Premiership. It's back underway. Gloucester taking on Northampton, the early kickoff over at King's Home at the moment. And good news for Gloucester with Danny Cipriani in tow. They are 21 points to 11 to the good at half time. The Gallagher Prem will be part of the sporting calendar for the months to come.
The waiting is over. A brand new season, new stories to be told, new stars to break through.
He's got 3 tries on a Sunday afternoon. And Harlequins are at it again. Yard scores! Ireland will put the cherry on the cake. Saracens.
Everton's the champions. They have wrestled the trophy back.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.